Hey, you heard the news. A group of 75 Afghan children without their parents, no guardians, traveling alone, arrived in Chicago yesterday, about 800 more scheduled to still come. Coming into the schools, finding places for them to live, all kinds of arrangements need to be made. Paul Vallis, former CEO of Chicago Public Schools, has been through this kind of thing before. I know you were the head of the schools in New Orleans when you brought in Haitian refugees, and here in Chicago, Bosnian refugees came in when there was unrest in the Balkans, too. Can't imagine it is an easy thing to do. I mean, these poor kids, the things they've been through, and then arriving here without a parent and trying to make them, introduce them to schools in a whole new environment. It's a challenge, I would imagine. Paul, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. It certainly is, but you know, the district has been through these experiences before. I remember during the Balkan War, the Bosnian refugees and refugees who were coming from Kosovo, and of course the Haitian refugees coming to New Orleans, where we received a very large infusion of refugees. Many of them who were coming without parents. So it can certainly be a challenge, but the city's certainly equipped to handle that. Clearly, the mayor's office is already mobilizing city efforts. I think it's incumbent upon the schools to reach out and play their part too. And some of the things that the schools can do is to really designate receiver schools that can be prepared to receive these kids. Obviously, providing bus transportation and things like that is critical. Something that the district does for regular students anywhere, for many regular students, but also reaching out to families within the school system itself. There's a lot of families. I know in the past we've always been able to put together a list and identify an inventory of families that would be willing to take in kids, or in some cases provide support for a much larger number of families that are coming, obviously families with children. So at the end of the day, I think there's certainly a role for the schools to play, but this is not a role that they have not played in the past.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And yet, you think about what each one of those kids might have been through in their home country, and the kinds of things they've seen, the trauma that goes along with that, the coming to a new country you've never been to without a parent, and then trying to be reintroduced. I can't even imagine what a teacher in a classroom, much less anyone who's part of the system trying to help this child, the challenges involved with doing that. That's got to be so tough.
You know, it is very tough, but you'll be amazed at how resilient those children are. You know, I remember the trauma of the Haitian earthquake and the huge number of families that came and actually settled in the city, or for that matter, nationwide. The huge infusion of refugees. In fact, the State Department made special accommodations to handle the numbers that came in. But now you look 10, 12 years later, and not only have the children thrived, but their families have thrived. You know, it's interesting, the Haitian diaspora, those are Haitians who have settled in countries other than their native country. The amount of money that they're actually remitting back to Haiti now is more than two times what they were remitting 12 years ago. In other words, all those refugees who settled in other countries are now sending $3.5 billion back to that to the island. So that is a reflection of the success of those Haitians who came here and swelled the numbers of Haitians, not only in Chicago, but obviously in many other major cities, as well as in foreign countries like France. So these individuals have been very successful. But there's a role that I think the schools must play, ensuring that the kids are receiving the benefits that they need, providing that special assistance. A lot of times designating schools so you're just not sending one child to a separate school, rather than maybe you're sending small clusters of children to designated schools so that you can, so that the economies of scale will allow you to hire that additional person who can work with the children and obviously speak the language, translate, et cetera. I think those are things that the district has the capacity to do and that the district has done before.
Mm-hmm. Well, good to hear. You know, Paul, you mentioned Haiti, and I know you've done a lot of work in Haiti, humanitarian efforts and otherwise, and become very familiar with the politics and everything going on there. The big story you see nationally right now, if not internationally, are the Haitian refugees here on the border. What do you make of that situation? Give us your perspective.
Well, you know, I think the problem is whether there is a strategy or not, there's this perception that we have open borders, and you know, albeit for me to judge, you know, just because I see certain things on the news, I'm not going to draw any conclusions. But when you have a perception that the borders are open, people are going to rush to the border and they're going to try to get into the United States. And there has been no more disadvantaged group than the Haitians. So I've talked at length on your show before about just how poor that country is and the devastation from earthquakes and hurricanes. So, you know, it's just logical that they would try to get into the United States. And you know, these are not Haitians that are landing in Florida, taking makeshift rafts. These are Haitians who are going through Mexico. So there's this perception here, whether it's perception or reality, that the borders are open. And I think that's one of the reasons you're seeing the flood of Haitians to the border. The big problem for the federal government is if they have a strategy or don't have a strategy when it comes to dealing with these influx of revenue of Haitians, it's their strategy for basically returning them to their home country. Many of the Haitians that have actually crossed the border are actually not coming. Well, they're not only not coming from Haiti, but many of them have been living in Mexico, in other Central American countries for many, many years. So they haven't been to Haiti in many, many years. So you're going to be taking thousands of people, and you're going to be dropping them off on the tarmac in the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, a country that is undergoing immense challenges from the political instability of that country or just trying to recover from another devastating earthquake. So there seems to be a lack of strategy on how you're dealing with the refugees that you take into custody. So I think that's and obviously we're seeing a reflection of that in those really brutal pictures that we're seeing on the way they're trying to round up the Haitians on the border.
Sure, absolutely. We've all seen those, and I'm glad to get your perspective on that. Hey, before I let you go, Paul, do want to ask you about something we'll be talking about on the show, something I'd like to see if you could weigh in on. There's lots of concerns about the way all of the protocols are going in the Chicago Public Schools when it comes to COVID. They said only 2.5% of students have opted in to weekly tests this far into the school year. Just 3,000 students and staff have been tested. They say contact tracing hasn't been going well. It takes 7 days in some cases to tell a parent that your kid has been, you know, in contact with someone with COVID. And now just today, the mayor says with 10,000 Chicago Public School students now in quarantine, they expect that to decrease. They're going to tighten up who has to quarantine. Some parents were asking for that. I wonder what you think about that.
Well, I think, look, I've always thought that schools, as the parochial and private schools demonstrated, as Miami-Dade, some of the other large school districts in the country demonstrated, like Miami-Dade, that never closed last year, schools can be open, can follow proper safety protocols, the kids can be safe and secure. And the bottom line is the kids are least adversely impacted by the virus. That said and done, you know, you've got to build trust among the school district's families. And when you're not doing the testing, when you're not doing the skip tracing, when you're failing to do what you had promised to do in terms of doing the testing and doing the tracing so that parents can become fully informed on who has the virus and who might have come into contact with individuals who have been infected, it just contributes to this perception that somehow the district is not being open and honest with them. And that feeds this fear, and in some cases unsubstantiated fear, but fear nevertheless. The biggest risk to the district is the unknown. And when parents don't have the information they need, when there is a lack of transparency, parents are naturally fearful, and these are the repercussions. Look, schools, there's no more important priority than keeping schools open. There's no more important priority than making sure that you're following the proper safety protocols. And there's no more important priority than you doing the testing, you doing the skip tracing in a timely manner, you getting the information out so people have confidence that you're being open and honest with them. And at the end of the day, I think that's really not happening. And that's why you're seeing the concern and the anxieties are really manifesting themselves in some pretty angry parents.
It's a policy issue. It's a communication issue, as you point out. Paul, thank you for the time today. Appreciate it. Good hearing from you.
Thanks for having me.
Paul Vallis, former CEO of Chicago Public Schools. In a moment, we'll talk to a CPS parent, part of a Chicago Parents Collective, a group that is trying to urge CPS to do better when it comes to the protocols and voice their concerns. The mayor today, by the way, said we're nowhere near shutting down any school at all. She made that clear. And Dr. Arwady said, yes, there are outbreaks, but when we say outbreaks, it's 2 to 4 people. We don't have the biggest outbreak right now. She says we have is 4 people. It speaks to what Paul was just talking about. When you say outbreak, maybe that scares a lot of parents into thinking it's bigger than it is. We'll talk with Ryan Griffin coming up here, a CPS parent, in a moment on WGN. So the mayor says she's disappointed in how COVID protocols have been going in the schools so far this year. Let's get a parent's perspective. Ryan Griffin joins us from time to time and has done that throughout the past year and a half. He's with the Chicago Parents Collective, a group of parents who voice their concerns and just try to make their voices heard as things move forward. Hey, Ryan, thanks for joining. And I just want to know what's on your mind today as we're getting a lot of news about how things are not going so well within CPS. What do you think?
Yeah, Anna, thanks for having me on. And I'll echo Mr. Vallis' comments, right? We need to kind of stop with the fear, right? And it does create anxiety. But Anna, the news today out of the mayor's office, I'm glad she's listening. Our group spoke during the open forum yesterday at Chicago's Board of Education meeting on this very issue on the quarantining policy, right? There's some headlines out there that we've got, 10,000 kids in quarantine. And as we're seeing in New York and Philadelphia, those major districts are taking a scalpel to the quarantine policies and following the guidance. The idea that you could test back into school with a negative test. And so we're glad to see that the mayor continues to push this forward because the positivity rates are below 3%. We're talking about child hospitalizations from COVID under 1 per day. And you compare that on what's going on with RSV and other respiratory illnesses. I mean, as Mr. Vallis said, schools are safe. They're safe to be open. And we've got to keep pressing forward.
You mentioned the quarantine rules. Wasn't one of your own children affected by this?
Yeah. And at the end of the day, sat out 14 days. And one big thing, if you look at the elementary school kids, Anna, they're sitting in small tables, right? Pods of, 4 or 5 kids. And the close contact definitions under the CDC, these kids are wearing masks all day. And we're quarantining complete classrooms of 25, 30 kids. When maybe 5 kids have been exposed, and instead of quarantining them for 10 days, like the CDC will allow, or 7 days with a negative test, we're keeping kids out of school for 14 days, likely under extreme precaution when the risks are not that high. I'm glad the mayor is vocal on this. And now she just has to get the contact tracing and hold CPS accountable for better testing and better contact tracing to reinstill faith.
Speak to that, Ryan. Last we talked, you said that it was 7 days, roughly, lag time in between when a kid was potentially exposed to COVID and when the parents found out about it. And that seemed like we called attention to that, because if you want to go hang out with elderly relatives or something like that, vulnerable people, you might want to know sooner. Has that changed at all?
It sounds like the communication is getting better as they're learning, right? These first cases in the first couple weeks, even, as you sit in these local school council meetings with principals from across the district, they do talk about, learning how to deal with this, right? Now that we have schools fully reopened. Remember last year, we were talking about hybrid learning, really small classrooms. So I think, I don't want to chalk it up to the first couple weeks. There's always bumps in the road. But it does sound like it's getting better. Again, obviously, we appreciate all the attention to the contact tracing. And it sounds like CPS is diverting resources. The districts are diverting resources to this issue. But to Mr. Vallis' point, we need this to instill confidence for parents. We look at the attendance rates. About 92% of kids showed up on the first day. And I would challenge right now, if the fear was truly out there from the community and from families, would attendance rates look similar to what it looked like pre-COVID?
And what was that?
Slightly higher, low 90s as well. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that's the question, is we've got this outsized megaphone that's out there screaming fear and chaos. Mm-hmm. But for most families, the return to school has been relatively normal.
Good to hear.
Yeah. And so, again, we're trying to find the positives here with the kids being back in school. And now let's minimize the disruption as the Delta variant kind of has passed through, hopefully. And we see case counts continue to plummet here as we hopefully turn the corner.
Yeah, I hope so. And you point out a very important there's an important issue here about fear, because I think as a parent, if you got a note that came home or an email that said there's been an outbreak in your kid's class or your kid's school, you might say, oh my gosh, this is terrible. And Dr. Arwady even clarified that could be two individual cases. Isn't that right?
Yeah. And again, we're talking scale here, right? We're talking about a district of 340,000 students, and we're talking about 300 cases. Mm-hmm. Can anybody do the math here on what that reflects? Two cases in a school of 500 kids is not an outbreak. And again, I think a very vocal group out there is stoking fears amongst parents when we should all be coming together and making people feel comfortable with what's going on. But, you know, that's just not happening. It hasn't happened for a year and a half, unfortunately.
Ryan, I got to go. I just always, I like getting your perspective. I'm happy you and the other parents and the Chicago Parents Collective is out there having your voices heard. It's a voice of reason, and I'm darn happy to hear it. I really am, Ryan.
Always
thank you for
the time.
Time,
Anna. Thank you. Bye.